Ramsey TV.
Someone asked a question on yesterday's video about the two becoming one flesh, and what does it mean? And does putting the male member into the female member, does that make people married? Short answer, no, it does not make people married, because it's possible to be having sex without being married, and to be married without having sex. In this context, marriage is a covenant relationship under God between a man and a woman, and that is a separate thing, separate from putting the male member into the female member. This is Martin Sender. I don't shy away from any of the difficult topics. Many people are dealing with this issue, so I'm going to set the record straight as I see it from the scriptures. If anybody wants more information, I made a video a few years ago called "What Does God Think of Premarital Sex?" I'm going to link that for you below. I'm still not at full capacity here. I feel like crap. I felt worse waking up today than I did yesterday. It's 5:30 in the morning right now. On Friday, I woke up at 2:45. I got the flu for sure. But anyway, the show must go on, and the show will go on. So in the garden, we see a man shall be joined to his wife, and the two become one flesh. How is the two? It's all symbolic, by the way. The two become one flesh when the man puts his member inside the female member. And it's a picture. It's a picture of something divine, for sure. But anybody that does it, including like two teenagers in the back of a Chevy Contour. Ford. Chevy doesn't make Ford Contour. Yeah. Two teenagers in the back of a Ford Contour. They're enacting the picture of humanity being joined once again. That is, the two sexes is a temporary situation to picture divine truths. But the two sexes, thankfully, will be done away with when perfection is reached. It's only a temporary expedient, again, to teach lessons about the drawing of all humanity toward God. That's the parable of sexual attraction, is the drawing power of God. In this parable, the woman represents God and the man represents humanity. And it's the drawing power that bring the two together. I write all about this in my book, Divine Principles of Sexual Attraction. Might as well link that to you down here. Also, that book says a lot in a few pages. It'll explain things to you about why there's sex in the first place. So, you see, when Adam was in the garden, he was a complete human being. He had both sexual organs inside of him. God did not remove a rib to make the woman. Put Adam to sleep. KJV, NIV, NASB. Saying God took a rib. No, he didn't take a rib. If it was a rib, we would have seen the Chaldean word there, Allah, for an anatomical rib, A-L-A. Instead, we see the Hebrew word T-S-E-L-A, Sela, which is an angular hollow vault. And even the NASB puts in the, they have a footnote at rib, and you look at the bottom, and it says, or something on Adam's side. See, they weren't sure. They hedged the bet. Or something on Adam's side. No, because that word was used many times in Ezekiel to describe the side walls of the temple. The temple had rooms on the side. And they were rooms. They were vaults. And they were angular because the three stories of the temple, they got wider as they went up. I think it went from 5 cubits to the lower floor, 6 cubits and 7 cubits. And if you take that temple, the shape of those side walls, you get the shape of the uterus. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, God took the uterus and the accompanying female parts from Adam to create the woman. It's a great truth. And so, you see, when Adam was in the garden, he didn't have the male member hanging out there before Eve was there. No, it wasn't hanging out. It was inside of him, because I don't know if any of y'all notice this, but the penis fits perfectly into the vagina of the female. It's amazing. Almost like it was made for it. It's a sheath that the male member fits perfectly into. Well, you see, that was together before the woman was taken from the man. That was together. So Adam wasn't hanging out there in the garden. Not until those female organs were removed from him did the male member hang out there. See? And then he sees Eve, and the male member responds to this new creature because, you know, it longs for the old neighborhood. Every time men and women have sex, the man's member is longing for the old neighborhood. Well, this is where it used to be. Used to be in there. So the rib makes no sense at all. It's absolute stupidity. Does a man long for his missing rib in the sexual embrace? I don't think so. What does he long for? Oh, well, he longs for the parts that are missing from him. And his male member knows the penis is smarter than the man because it rises to the occasion. And like I said, it longs for the old neighborhood. So whenever people, anybody has sexual intercourse, it's a picture of humanity being reunited. And the sexual desire itself is a picture of the pull of God upon humanity and the longing of humanity for God. So the shocking thing about this is that anybody who has sexual intercourse pictures this. And the two becoming one flesh, this ideally happens in a marriage between a man and a woman. That is a covenant relationship between them and God. But it doesn't exclusively have to be that. So this insertion of the penis into the vagina can happen in a marriage. It should happen in a marriage, but can also happen outside of a marriage. I got proof for you. You look at Solomon, who had 700 wives and 300 concubines. What's a concubine? It's kind of like an adjunct to the family. A concubine was not a wife. Otherwise, there wouldn't be the distinction made. 700 wives and 300 concubines. A concubine was not a wife. A concubine did not have the privileges of a wife. When Abraham went into Sarah's handmaid, that was a concubine situation. And did Abraham entering into her make them married? Did Abraham enter into a covenant relationship with Hagar? No. No, he did not. And neither did Solomon with any of his 300 concubines. So that act itself does not a marriage make. And the opposite is true also, that people can be betrothed or entering into a covenant relationship with God and not have sex, not have sexual intercourse. That was the case with Joseph and Mary. Gabriel told the couple that you're not to have sex until Jesus is born, but they were betrothed and married before that, or at least betrothed. And so they were married, not having sex. And the two teenagers in the back of the Ford Contour are having sex, but they're not being married. And the crime of the Catholic Church is making this intercourse into some sort of sacrament. They say, the Catholic Church says that putting that in there, a man and a woman, automatically makes people married. And because of this false idea, the Catholic Church has ruined so many lives because people were forced to get married, that is to enter into a covenant relationship that should in no way have been married. But they guilted them into it. The Catholic Church guilts people into it because, you know, just like the altar boy rings that bell when the priest raises the wafer to the crucifix and holds it up and ding, 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 ding. Remember that? If you're in the Catholic Church back in the day, the altar boy rings the bell and that wafer somehow magically becomes the body of Christ. That's all fake. It's not true. And neither is a man putting his penis in the vagina. It's a magical moment when a couple is one with God. No, it's a separate thing. But Paul says, and it says in Genesis that the two become one flesh. That's true, but it's not a permanent condition. The two become one flesh while it's happening. I'm going to show you a shocking demonstration here on this edition of MZTV. Are you ready for this? If you're just listening to me on the MP3 file and not watching me, you're going to miss this, but here's how it works. Watch. One flesh, not one flesh. One flesh, not one flesh. One flesh, not one flesh. As long as that male member is in there, they're one flesh. but it's not a permanent condition. A bell doesn't ring and make it a covenant relationship. Another example I can prove this from, and I can use to prove my contention here, is from Exodus 22 and Deuteronomy 22. You'll find this in the accompanying video, that a man was only required to marry a woman he had sex with. A single man, a single woman, if he had sex with her, he was only required to marry her if she was a virgin. This was a specific law in Israel because a virgin was very valuable to her father. A man paid a lot of money to the father in the form of a dowry to have a virgin for his wife. It was very important. So if a man seduced or, God forbid, raped a woman who was a virgin, he was required to marry her because he had just destroyed her value. It sounds bad, but this is the way it worked back then. He destroyed her value in the marketplace, okay? And he destroyed her value for his father. Again, virginity, very valuable thing in Israel. So this verse, to me, proves, because there's a specific law that says a man must marry a woman if she's a virgin, tells me that he doesn't have to marry a woman he has sex with if she's not a virgin. And that's exactly the case. And you go to Leviticus chapter 20, as I do in the accompanying video, and you can see all the people you can and can't have sex with. It's right there, very clear. Don't have sex with animals, don't have sex with relatives, don't have sex with somebody who's married. That's pretty much it, okay? Hey, don't shoot the messenger. In fact, I'm going to get to something with Paul in 1 Corinthians 6. Remind me of that. Don't let me forget that. So I told you that two teenagers in that Ford Contour, not a Chevy Contour, please, Ford Contour, they're picturing a divine truth. They are. Well, Martin, you have another example of that in the scriptures? Of course I do. Romans chapter 2, those of the nations who have no law, they're doing the just requirements of the law by what? By loving one another, by considering their associate more valuable than themselves, or loving their associate as themselves, right? Anybody could do that. And even two heathen who are not two heathen, all I need is one heathen for this example. Excuse me. So there's one heathen who considers another person and does a nice thing for that person, loves that person according as he loves himself. That person is fulfilling the just requirements of the law. Not through law. I need to make that clear. Not through law, because the law only came to one nation, Israel. Didn't come to this heathen guy of my example here. So that person is actually living out a spiritual truth without knowing anything about the spiritual truth. And that spiritual truth lasts only as long as the guy is being nice to the person. If he goes out the next day and kills the person, then it's not illustrating the spiritual truth. Nice to the person, illustrating spiritual truth. Not nice to the person, not illustrating spiritual truth. It goes along with this. One flesh, not one flesh. One flesh, not one flesh. All right, the guy's nice. It's like, yeah, illustrating spiritual truth, not even realizing it. Kills a person, not illustrating spiritual truth. Illustrating it, not illustrating it. So anybody can do it. They don't know what they're doing. Not claiming that they do know what they're doing. Of course, they don't know what they're doing, but they're doing it anyway, and it pictures a divine truth. Anywhere there's sexual attraction in the world, and I have a feeling it's going on a lot right now as I'm speaking, even sexual attraction, not necessarily even intercourse, but sexual attraction, is picturing a divine truth of the longing of humanity for something greater than itself, which is God. I'm going to back myself up here again in 1 Corinthians chapter 6. Shocking passage. Paul says, he who joins to a prostitute, and in the context, it's a cult prostitute. A cult prostitute differing from a regular prostitute in that the cult prostitute used sexual intercourse as a vehicle, as a means to associate a man with a foreign deity. That was prohibited in Israel. And there were two separate Hebrew words for a regular run-of-the-mill prostitute and a cult prostitute. Cult prostitution was absolutely condemned because it was a sin of idolatry, not a sin of sex, you see. A sin of idolatry. In fact, adultery is not a sin of sex, it's a sin of stealing. Thou shalt not steal. So that includes stealing another man's wife. Thou shalt not have foreign gods before me. That would include having sex with a cult prostitute, and the purpose of that is to align one through the sexual intercourse interaction with a foreign deity. No, no, don't do it. Bad news in Israel. So the fact that intercourse does not a marriage make is illustrated here, because Paul says, why would you take your body and join it to a prostitute, a cult prostitute in this context? Don't you realize, Paul says, that you become one body with the prostitute and that the two become one flesh? Yes, that happens as long as that's in there, but it doesn't instigate a permanent situation. If it did, Paul would say, well, you've done it now, dude. Now you have to marry. You have to legally marry the cult prostitute, because when you put that in there, you done did it, and now you have to marry her. No, Paul's not a Catholic, you see. He's not a Catholic. All Paul says is, hey, don't do that again. Read it, 1 Corinthians 6. Don't do that again. But this proves that even a man joined to a cult prostitute, which is an illicit relationship, the fact remains that there's still, when that goes in there, when the male member goes into the female receptacle, that is a picture of a truth of humanity one day becoming one flesh again. Men and women, the two sexes will be abolished, thank God, and humanity will be one again. Great truth. So people ask me what I think about same-sex marriage. Well, same-sex marriage is ridiculous. I'll say something shocking right now. Also, heterosexual marriage, that is legal marriage, is also ridiculous unless people are members of the body of Christ or believers. Marriage in the scriptures is a covenant relationship between a man and a woman who are both believers. Let me just stick to the body of Christ here in the Greek scriptures. When a man and a woman who are both in the body of Christ become decide to have a covenant relationship, then they enter into this Ephesians 5 state where the husband is the head of the wife and the wife is subject to the husband. This doesn't happen with a legal arrangement between members of the opposite sex who are not believers. So, in my humble opinion, ladies and gentlemen, legal marriage is absurd. Period. If two believing members of the body of Christ want to enter a covenant relationship with God, they certainly don't need, and it's very detrimental to seek the acquiescence of the state, because the state dares insinuate itself between a man and a woman, so that you basically have three parties in the modern marriage: the man, the woman, and the state. That is BS. That's evil. That's an evil. Many people have been destroyed by it. Certainly two people who are members of the body of Christ can enter in a covenant relationship with each other. And they enter into the Ephesians 5 situation. But anybody else deciding to live together and deciding to bring the state into their relationship, all that is a legal arrangement for certain social advantages or governmental advantages. That's all it is. It's meaningless apart from social advantages, legal stuff. I hate it. I mean, it just doesn't make sense. I mean, you can do it for practical reasons. But if you're not two members of the body of Christ, then it just doesn't count as a marriage. You can call it a marriage. You can say that the state has joined you together, but you're not joined together by God. Unless you're two members of the body of Christ. I mean, you can still do it for practical purposes. But don't think for a second that it's a godly union. That's a legal arrangement, okay? That's what it is. So the two becoming one flesh, it's a truth. And it exists. It's not, what I want to say is, it's not simultaneously a covenant relationship with God. The two things are separate. And again, I'll end with this, because I think I said this earlier, it's pretty good. People can have sex without entering a covenant relationship with God. And people can enter a covenant relationship with God without having sex. And you can even put your male member, I don't recommend this to anyone, you can even put the male member into the vagina of a cult prostitute. And while you're doing that, the spiritual truth still prevails that, oh, that's one body at that time, and it's becoming one flesh at that time. It's just the way it is when that goes in there, because, again, it harkens back to the first human in the garden before the second human, the woman, was taken out of him. As far as relationships go, I tell you all, just be careful. Don't do stupid things. And yet, God gave the sexual dance, if you will, for the pleasure of humanity. It's just like food. You can go to a fast food restaurant. You can pull up to a McDonald's and get a hamburger, French fries, and a milkshake. Or you can go to a five-star restaurant and get a five-course meal and dine elegantly. So sexual intercourse or any kind of sexual activity between single people, it can be done simply for pleasure. Even when you're married, right? You got this thing called the quickie, as I recall. The quickie. It's like, I just need some relief. Do you mind helping me out? Sure. Okay, that's like eating fast food. But then you have the very intimate, very like soul melding sexual intercourse. It's a whole nother ball game. But both things can happen. And it's ideal for this to happen in a covenant relationship between two members of the body of Christ. That's the best way to do it. But it's not the only way to do it. Hey, it's not the only way to do it.